All right, welcome everyone to another edition of the 7500 to Holt podcast. My name is Gareth Simpson, and I'm here with Kirsten Schlewitz,
Hello.
Andrew Cieslak,
Hello.
and noted Arsenal fan Ted Harwood of the Short Fuse.
Hello.
After a weekend where the world has lost, an oppressor of so many, Jon Bon Jovi. Think it's important to remember, that there are more serious things in life than football. But nonetheless, that's what we're tasked to cover, even if they're terrible, awful football teams such as Aston Villa. And so we played a game at the week, not us personally, although I'm sure we would have done just as well. We lost 2-0 to Liverpool. I think that was mostly expected. Although it was that rendered the actual game no less comical. Kirsten, what did you think?
I'm still kind of upset about those 2 hours that I lost of my life and I will never get back. It just felt like we, not we, because as you said, we weren't actually playing the game of football, although at this point we might want to. But the team just seemed like they didn't care for those last 20 minutes. Like they had nothing to give, and not so much that, but they just didn't want to give it. Which was probably the worst part. It wasn't losing, it was seeing that reaction.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's hard to sort of pick through that and see, any silver lining.
No, I mean, I don't know. I thought the first, even though it sounds weird to say, obviously they scored twice in the first, I think, what, 25 minutes? It was pretty much over by then. But other than those two set pieces, which were terrible, obviously, I thought that we showed something. Okay, they, sorry, showed something going forward a little, and then it just got worse and then non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, for a while I was sitting there like Aaron came down to visit me before the game. He was here on Saturday and we were talking about whether he would actually watch the match or not. And I was sitting there thinking through much of the game, like, okay, well, we're losing, but at least there's a reason to watch. At least we look decent going forward. And then I have no idea what it was that happened. It didn't seem like there was a trigger point, but all of a sudden, any momentum, any desire that the team had was just gone.
Yeah, I think that they certainly lost interest, and I think maybe they should be lauded to a certain degree for showing at least some attacking intent, because we didn't have Gabby and we didn't have Darren Bent, and so if ever there was an occasion for McLeish to just sit back and invite pressure, this would have been it, and it would have been at least somewhat excusable. But yeah, I think when we really come down to it with McLeish, and this is what genuinely irks me of all the things about him that irritate me, is that, I mean, fundamentally what he's advertised as is a no-nonsense defensive manager who is coming in to sort out, our trouble with set pieces, which is fair enough. We've had trouble with set pieces under Houllier. They weren't great under O'Neill, and so that's something our defenders struggle with. And you'd think, like, if he was able to do any one thing, that's the thing he's made his name for. So, I mean, right now we have a manager who doesn't do what he's supposed to do, and he's just being a real dick about it. And so it gets really frustrating because Richard Dunn was not particularly impressive. I think he's legal possession of Luis Suarez at this point.
Oh man.
And yeah,
Hey,
there's
he won the rematch.
oh, good Lord. So I mean, yeah, there's not a whole lot that we can say about the loss to Liverpool, because I don't think ultimately that it will lead to anything. I'm sure Darren Bent had a very nice day out.
Yeah.
I don't blame him at all for
No.
going shopping.
And that added a little intrigue to the day, I think. People got really upset about it, and some people were just like, "Is this real?" And some people were like screaming at him on Twitter, and it was like, it was just embarrassing. And is it really relevant? Does it matter that much? I don't know. I guess the fact that Agbonlahor was sitting there suffering like everybody else, in a Cleveland hat for some reason.
He's, you know, showing support.
Maybe it was a gift from Lerner.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Now you're thinking with your head. I couldn't put the connection together, but now I get it. All right.
Well, that, anyway, yeah. I mean, that's an actual physical manifestation of the association we've been making with Aston Villa's play all year. Is that, you know, just general mediocrity.
Which you associate with
Cleveland. With the Indians.
Which I associate with all Cleveland sports.
All okay. Cleveland sports. Yes.
Yeah, and I don't know. It did have a whiff of one of those sort of manufactured stories that are supposed to brew more conflict than they really deserve. And I mean, especially when you consider that I think last year when that whole big thing blew up about James Collins and Richard Dunn getting really, really drunk and fighting people, like, we even shrugged that off. Like, we were like, oh, guys, don't overreact. So this isn't even close to on the scale of that.
And to be fair, he didn't spend his entire afternoon shopping. He noticed when the team got bad and left rather than watch the final 20 minutes. So really what I'm bitter at him about is the fact that I watched those final 20 minutes and he did not.
I guess I will claim ignorance that I didn't really know he wasn't going to be playing, I guess. I don't know if I wasn't just paying attention or what. And then someone said there was a rumor of a bust up between him and McLeish, and I wasn't sure if that was true. And then I see that he's out shopping, and I'm like, holy shit, it's all gone to hell. But apparently his comments said that he's sorry, and he obviously has no problem with McLeish, et cetera, et cetera. He's loyal to Villa, blah, blah, blah. Although I'm sure he's thinking twice about that after seeing how everyone reacted to this.
I mean, that's got to be just PR nonsense, because if he's actually happy with McLeish, I have to wonder about his sanity, because he's you shouldn't be. You should be very upset that you're, you know.
Well, I don't
think it could ruin his chance to go to the Euros.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know if we want to segue into Stu Downing's comments, considering.
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah, I was trying to hang around for Robert, because considering how, you know, Stuart Downing has basically reached fallen idol status for Robert, but we might as well get into it now, because it's by far the most interesting aspect of that, of the weekend's loss. And so Stuart Downing, you know, received a certain amount of abuse from the Aston Villa support, I think understandably.
Hey, as I know, nobody concussed him, so I don't think.
No, that's true. Yeah, and if ever there was a moment for Alan Hutton to go in hard, but you know, he'll let you down.
He had his chance. Fucking is.
Yeah. Do we want the exact quote? I've pulled it up. I might as well.
Yes.
So the headline in the Express's Star is Villa win proves a point. Stuart Downing told the Liverpool Echo. So I guess this is kind of secondhand. Well, not secondhand, but you know, he said, I knew I would get booed and get some stick, but that wasn't a problem for me. I was just focused on ensuring we got a result, and I think they gave up after about 50 or 60 minutes and turned on their own team. We were by far the better team. I think it proved a point in terms of showing why I wanted to come to Liverpool. It wasn't to do with money. I've joined a top team. So.
Wait, there's more.
There is more, yeah, I think. There we go.
Where he says, look at the players we've got on the bench who can't get a game.
On the bench who can't get a game, that shows how strong the squad is. This was the right move for me at the right time. I enjoyed my time at Villa. It's a great club with great people, sort of contradicting what he said earlier there. And this was one of the places we needed to come to get 3 points. So, I guess we're not exactly breaking news that Stuart Downing's just a massive tool, but that was really...
That's pretty classy.
Particularly unpleasant.
Yeah, that's not taking the high road, so to speak.
And I think it's still kind of missing, at least my main issue with Downing leaving is that he said he wouldn't leave, and sort of the moral, ethically sort of blind spot of, you know, collecting a whole bunch of checks while you were too injured to play for your new club. And then, you know, he didn't really give us a great deal of time. He was our best player last season, but that's, we paid how much for one season of Stuart Downing?
I don't even know. I don't even want to think about it.
No, I generally don't like to go back and look and find out how much Martin O'Neill spent on a player, because generally
I thought it was 10 million. I could be mistaken, but I'm almost positive. Let me look.
I think it was because he was bought from Middlesbrough around the same right. time that City bought Adam Johnson from Middlesbrough. And I think we paid more for Downing than they did for Johnson. But I could be making that up.
Well, so, that's something that will never occur again.
It was a $10 million transfer fee with an extra $2 million to be paid on appearances.
Oh, excellent. Well, yeah. That's
$10 million. Pounds, sorry.
Pounds. Jeez. So more, even.
More. Maybe, what, $16, $17 million?
Yeah.
Sweet.
So, you know, I guess... How much
did we get for him in return? 20?
20. We turned a profit, but it's not like we did a whole lot with that profit.
I think the most interesting part is when he says they turned on their own team. Does he mean the fans, or does he mean the team turned on themselves?
I think he means the fans. And
okay.
This is sort of pointing at an issue that a lot of people for years have called out Villa fans for being, you know, very negative and turning on their being really ready to turn on their own team and boo their own team. And I guess, I don't know. I mean, they did. They certainly did. You know, I think Villa was booed off at full time. So he's not wrong.
No, he's not. And it's nice of him to rub it in. Obviously, he, you know, really has a lot of compassion for his former club and the fans who cheered him for a while and a lot and loved him and voted him player of the year. Nice guy. Classy.
Good yeah. Stuff. Yeah. That's the problem. It's not necessarily just that he's a dick. It's that he's a dick and he's correct.
Yeah, that is.
He's like, you suckers are stuck with this team.
And I got out. Ha, 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 ha.
Pretty much.
So I think that pretty much covers anything we needed to go over about the Liverpool match. I don't think there's a whole lot. Aaron's not here. I feel like if Aaron was here, he would tell us that Fabian Delph was terrible, because I think that was something I saw. He tweeted it and he included it in his match review. So I figure it's very important to mention Fabian Delph not living up to expectations.
And the thing about that is, how many chances is he going to get to live? Why are we exclusively using Delph as our young player and giving him chance after chance after chance? Is it just because he's the only defensive mid we've got on the bench?
I think that literally is it. I think we don't have a whole lot of, unlike Liverpool, if you listen to Stuart Downing,
yes.
We don't have a whole lot of people deserving a chance sitting on the bench. So
pretty much, instead of changing his tactics, changing his approach to the game, Alex McLeish prefers to keep using two defensive midfielders, even when one is utterly shite.
I think changing your approach to the game would involve acknowledging that there is more than one approach to the game, and I'm not sure Alex McLeish is quite there yet.
I'm also not quite sure he's humble enough to acknowledge that he has made mistakes.
And this is worth mentioning if there's anyone listening to this who hasn't read Richard Whittle's piece.
Yes, I was going to bring that up.
Over on The Score. It's really, really excellent. He's another Villa fan, sort of treading on my Canadian Villa fan territory. but he wrote an excellent piece about managerial charlatans, which charlatan is a great word.
Was great, and it also kind of reminds me of, not to talk about another sport, but it reminds me of baseball too, where you just see the same guys get the same job. It's like a merry-go-round. And it's like an old boys club, and
it absolutely is. And it's, you know, they're the preferred choice of unadventurous owners who just want who prize stability over
exactly.
You know,
and I think I saw Kirsten tweeted it, and Richard tweeted back. You know, sarcastically, what are they supposed to do? You know, like change their tactics? It's like, oh, you know, that, I mean, the only it seems like. If you look at it at face value, the only thing that seems to make a club rise from mediocrity is some rich guy comes in, buys them, and spends shitloads of money. When in actuality, and that is a nice segue, but in a second, in actuality, obviously, if you can get a forward-thinking manager who can use what he's given in a creative way, shocking, crazy idea, maybe you can get somewhere. But clearly that's not the case, and many owners are just not willing to try it.
So yes, I mean, as we alluded to, that is a bit of a segue because there was an absolutely ridiculous post on,
Yeah.
God, who was it? Was it a Villa fan?
I think
It
that,
was,
yeah.
yeah.
About some
The.
insane rumor that seemed to be just copy pasted from like the bear pit of some forum, and about how Qatar Sports Investments, after buying PSG and Malaga, wanted for some reason to purchase Aston Villa and just get them charging up the table and buy up every player. Which is, I mean, I'll give them credit because that is the most interesting story that Aston Villa has had surrounding it. Well, story is a strong word. The most interesting anything Aston Villa has had surrounding it for a few months now, and so kudos for that. But I don't imagine that's a thing that's actually going to happen.
I don't know, that anonymous poster that was in the forums seemed pretty sure, but nothing can be said until February or March.
It reminds me of the mystery man on Twitter who swore who our new manager was going to be,
Did he
and kept saying,
swear it was going to be McLeish, though?
"No, he." I think he said it was going to be Moyes, and he was absolutely 100% positive it was going to be Moyes.
Oh God. Well, that's, I mean, that's a tip off. First of all, I think Moyes will die as the Everton manager.
Absolutely.
So this led me to think about, because I mean that would be an interesting storyline. So I wanted to get us thinking about, we're coming up on a new year and we've got however many 5 more months of Villa matches to get through. And so I was wanting for us to make some sort of prediction or something for a storyline or a potential even semi-plausible event that could sort of capture our attention for Villa, over the coming months, so we just don't, kill ourselves from boredom by March. And so I'll go first if that's all right.
All
And
right.
this one's more, plausible. It's a bit depressing, but I imagine that it's not a huge leap to suggest that by the end of the season, at least one Villa player, probably one we like, will have fallen out with McLeish and request a transfer. And so I imagine, let's see, if I was going to be specific about it, I'd say Alex McLeish will last longer at Aston Villa than Barry Bannon.
Whoa.
What is this? Make Kirsten cry night?
It's a prediction. And I mean, that would be a big thing if Barry Bannon decided that he wasn't being used appropriately, which fair enough, he's not, and requested a transfer so he could get more playing time.
Scott on Scott violence.
Yeah, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be a brawl. That would be interesting.
Well, I was gonna say Al Brighton, but I think Al Brighton loves Villa too unconditionally to actually ever request a transfer. Although I think he fits in worse than Barry Bannon.
Although at least he's getting starts.
He is, yeah. Well, and
For now.
I feel like if we had podcasted last week, I was planning to title the episode Marky Mark's Redemption because that was such a feel good performance from him against Bolton.
Really was.
Yeah. Aw.
So, what about either you guys? Do you have any sort of predictions for what's going to make 2012 interesting, apocalypse aside?
My thought is I can't see all of our defenders making it through an entire season.
Oh, good. A big injury crisis.
Yes,
I would really.
which is weird to root for, but at the same time, I kind of want to see what happens should at least, well, probably with one of our central defenders hurt, things could be okay, but if two defenders get hurt, what can happen? I honestly don't know.
Well, if one of them's Hutton, improvement would be my guess.
Not in McLeish's mind.
No, that's true. He would probably just leave that. He would leave right back empty as a tribute.
Which, again, improvement.
Yeah,
So that's it.
I'm kind of along the lines of either somebody either requesting a transfer or here we go. How about this? This would make things very interesting. Is Gabby Agbon-Lahore says he wants out.
Oh yeah, that's another. I mean, that's another Villa fan. I think he's
like Villa for life, and that kind of fits in with what we were saying on email earlier, talking about clubs that kind of sell players at the height of their value and then reinvest into the youth system. Strikes me that Gabby would be the kind of guy who might have been sold at least once already.
The strangest thing is that I have never heard like any transfer rumors about Gabby. I suspect
there was some last year. I could have sworn there were.
Do you think he was really poor last season? I couldn't imagine that.
I thought he was really upset. I mean, he was one of the guys who's been on record as saying he hated it.
He did hate Julier, that's true, but he also doesn't seem like the sort of player that sort of big clubs would be sniffing around. I imagine that Villa is as good as he's ever going to do.
I don't even think it was one of the bigger clubs. There was rumors that last winter transfer window that he went somewhere for a medical, because everyone's talking about everyone going in on choppers, and it was a big joke. I can't remember, around the Torres stuff.
Yes.
Crap, I can't remember who it was. But anyway, your point stands. He's not often linked with other clubs at all. And it seems like he's got like a Villa for life thing going on with him. So I think if that was going to make things interesting, just to see people's reactions to that. And at this point, it's almost like I feel like trolling our own fans. Like, let's just see how pissed off they can get. Like, let's just really go for it. Let's bulldoze Villa Park, or just do something.
I was confused for a second. I was wondering whether you thought Villa was trolling its own fans or we were trolling Villa fans, because I get confused sometimes.
Well, often, yes, it does feel like Villa are trolling their own fans.
I mean, has anyone brought up the possibility that we're dealing with Agent McLeish?
Oh,
you know, there was an infographic or one of those in the Telegraph showing that Aston Villa at this point in the season are actually worse off than Birmingham were last year.
Well, I mean, how big of a laugh would those people have if their old shitty manager takes Villa down to the championship?
I mean, that's really it, isn't it? Because I mean, we've lost more games, we've scored less goals, and we're out of the Carling Cup. So,
but I mean, if a different, let's say we hired Roberto Martinez or whatever and got relegated, not nearly as funny.
No.
As McLeish coming here immediately and getting us relegated.
No, that's true.
And this is like the ultimate blue nose year if this were to happen. Not that it's going to.
No, I still
think we're more than capable of beating the crappy teams, which we will. It's fine.
Yeah, it's not so much a case of too good to go down as not quite bad enough to go down.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And so on that note, let's turn to Ted and see, get him involved, because in the middle of the week, we'll be playing Arsenal, and I imagine it will be a substantial loss. But you know, as an Arsenal fan, Ted is familiar with being, you know, a club in crisis. Crisis, of course, in air quotes, because it's all relative. Ted, how about sort of briefly sum up the last few weeks for Arsenal, the form they're on at the moment?
The last few weeks, up until yesterday, I actually felt pretty good about, aside from the fact that all of our fullbacks are apparently dead, never to be seen again. Yesterday,
hey, we've got one if you'd like.
I'm actually kind of worried about that in a way. Not about Alan Hutton in particular, but just about like what sort of like options are even out there if somebody has to come in January at that position. Because while I think playing four center backs is okay in most situations, yesterday in the match against City, it was kind of a problem because we had no width in the attack and we had midfielders who were used to having fullbacks that would provide them with options that just weren't there, because Johan Juru and Ignacy Mikkel just aren't really used to doing that kind of thing at all, particularly Mikkel, who's just slow. But overall, I think the past few weeks have been pretty good. Moving into the knockout stages of the Champions League was nice. The Premier League form is okay. I mean, I don't think losing 1-0 to City at Eastlands is particularly a huge problem, especially since we still have to play most of the top sides at home for the rest of the year. So I think we'll be okay. Yeah. So.
And of course, that's sort of neatly skirting every Arsenal fan's secret fear that Robin van Persie will eventually just be injured at some point.
Yeah, well, actually yesterday he hurt his ankle briefly yesterday, and the amount of horse placenta jokes that came flying out in the comments section was pretty astounding, actually. It was, but he was okay. Yeah, I mean, he's had quite a year. It's kind of makes me wistful to think what could have been if he had been more injury free for the past 6 or 7 years, because he always had the talent, but he was just always sort of on the edge of the starting 11 because of injury. But now it's really great to have him in this kind of form, and with the service that he's been getting from, particularly from Gervinho and Theo Walcott, who have been linking up with him really well. Yeah, it's been kind of amazing.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as far as I can remember, this is the sort of the longest streak that he's been healthy, because going back all the way to January, he was firing on all cylinders. So that's nearly a full year now, which is completely out of the ordinary. But I think I think it's probably worth mentioning that our last fixture against Arsenal, which I was actually in attendance for, was a 2-1 win for Villa at the Emirates, so I'm sure you're duly frightened this time around.
I still regret giving you that ticket.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, with the way the past couple of years have been, I take nothing for granted, because Arsenal is the kind of team that, if they're on, it's fine, but they have the uncanny ability to switch off against the strangest teams that you'd think they wouldn't switch off against,
like Blackburn.
I was just gonna say Blackburn.
Yeah. Although, you know, that was understandable to a certain degree, just because at that point the team really, it wasn't the same team. I mean, sure. It was, but the guys had only been together for about 2.5 weeks at that point. I was actually, when you guys were talking about McLeish earlier, I just kept thinking about the Carling Cup final last year, which, in addition to being the worst day of last year for me, was probably also the worst day of last year for most Villa fans, too, that didn't directly involve Aston Villa.
That's true.
Yes. I mean, I was very pleased with you.
Yeah. I know. I personally let everybody down.
Yes, you.
Yeah, I mean, that was a perfect example of the type of game. I mean, that's a game that Arsenal wins 9 times out of 10, probably, but just the stupidest stuff can happen. I think things have solidified at the back now. I don't think you'd see the same kind of thing happening now. And I think most people think that's because Sebastian Scolacci has been pretty far away from the first team for the past couple months. I don't think it's down to one guy. I mean, I think it's just familiarity more than anything. But it is a little bit suspicious sometimes with that guy. But
well, I would suspect that if it is down to one guy, it's not so much the absence of Scolacci as it is the presence of Thomas Vermaelen.
Yeah. That's probably true. And even though he was injured for a little bit this season, whenever he's been out there, it's just been a whole. You can just tell he just brings something to the side. I don't know if it's confidence. I mean, that's such a hard thing to gauge, but his first season at Arsenal, he had a tendency to sort of rush out of position and be sort of overly aggressive and sort of try to anticipate more than he maybe should have. But I think he's sort of figured out, now that he's sort of figured out the style and the pace of the teams that he's facing more, he's just looked really, really solid. And he offers a lot in attack, actually, too, which is kind of wild when he goes on these crazy meandering runs forward,
or what's when he lights like? Up. What's that like?
I know. I was just thinking the same thing. It's so foreign.
Yeah, man,
it must be so fun to have a central defender that scores in someone else's net for a change.
Yeah, well, he scored his share of own goals this year too. Actually, he scored one against who was it?
Wasn't it Fulham? He scored one at each end.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah, it was. It was. Our defenders have a sort of hilarious tendency to score on goals sometimes, as everybody knows. But yeah, I mean, he's really, I mean, he's really a really great sort of dynamic player, and I have a huge crush on him, a huge man crush on him. He's just I just really enjoy watching him play. Kirsten thinks it's weird that I have a crush on him, but I'll stand by it.
It's because he's terrifying looking.
Yeah.
I hardly think it's Kirsten's place to get judgy about having crushes on football players. So we'll move on. If you were to make a prediction for the match, what would you say?
I think that because it's at Villa, I think it'll be a little tougher for Arsenal than it would be otherwise. But I think Arsenal should win. I don't think it would be anything too crazy. I mean, I think probably a 1-0 or a 2-0. Don't know if, at the moment. I don't know what Villa does in the attack at the moment. You know,
it's, nothing. It's,
yeah. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, literally, okay, there's not one Villa fan here anyway who thinks we have a shot in hell of winning. I don't think. I don't mean to speak for you guys, but
see,
I think I'm...
I was just thinking that it's possible it could be a 1-1 draw with own goals scored at both ends.
Yeah.
I just feel like if I was a... Let's put me outside. Let's say I'm a fan of Everton, whatever, and I'm watching a... Put Arsenal Blackburn on and then put Arsenal Villa on side by side. Let's say they're separate games. I would say that Blackburn has a better chance of winning than Villa does, just because I can't see us winning any games that matter. Ever.
I can't see us winning games that involve scoring more than one or two goals, and that's something the Blackburn can do that we can't do. And certainly, I mean, if you put yourself in the position of a fan of any other team, like I've read sort of the minute by minutes over on the Guardian or whatever, whenever they do a Villa match, they always say how terrible Villa are. And so, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we're gonna get absolutely destroyed or anything, because I don't think
we just don't. We never do.
No,
it just doesn't happen.
And I think, if anything, after sort of the calamitous way we conceded against Liverpool, Alex McLeish will absolutely have been on, you know, Dunn and Collins and all of them in training. So I think, you know...
But isn't that what he said last time, too? We need to work on set pieces?
Well,
and
sure, yes.
What, 2 days, right? 2 days to pretty much go over this. I don't know if they get a day off after the match or not, but...
I hope not. They don't deserve one. They got the last 20 minutes off.
Knowing McLeish's reputation, I don't believe he's much for days off. But, you know, I think, if anything, I don't think Villa have been too poor 2 weeks in a row. Usually they're really bad, and then they're, you know, all right, and then they're really bad again. And so I think they're due to sort of step it up a little bit. I still think we'll lose, but it won't be embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the things that I would think about is Darren – do you guys think Darren Bent will be healthy by –
That's what I haven't seen anything about whether or not he will be. Have you guys?
I'm not even familiar with the like specifics of his injury, to be perfectly honest.
Neither am I. I have no idea.
The sort of thing that's just sprung up in training. But I mean, if it was something serious, it would have been reported like something serious. So
yeah.
And someone else was saying that it was just the flu, but he didn't seem to be saying that it was.
Physio room has him down for a hip/thigh injury and says he's a slight doubt for the 21st of December.
Well, and that's, I mean, the nature of his injury, one of the excuses he gave for going shopping is that because apparently the doctor told him he shouldn't be sitting down for too long at once or else his leg would start to hurt.
God.
Shouldn't we put him on the bench then, and he could have come on and not been sitting down for the last 20 minutes?
Well, I'm sure the doctor also probably mentioned something about not exerting yourself too much, although in our formation he doesn't exert himself a whole lot.
No.
I would think Darren Bent, I'm not a particularly superstitious person, but Darren Bent has scored the weirdest, like, 91st minute goals for whatever team he's on against Arsenal, just about seemingly like every game. Like when Darren Bent was on Sunderland, he would score these goals in the 91st minute where Sunderland would just like lump a free kick into the penalty area and the ball would bounce off like 9 players and just Darren Bent would just tap it in. And but I also think that, you know, if he doesn't play and depending on what Gabby does, I don't know that Astonville will have a lot going forward. I wouldn't worry about set pieces too much. I mean, Arsenal aren't the most threatening team offensively on set pieces. But what I would worry about is if, particularly if Theo Walcott and Gervinho are feeling alive at all, I could see them giving the back four a pretty hard time, unless Alan Hutton decides to destroy one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, our defenders don't handle pace particularly well. So, unless Alan Hutton decides to remove Gervinho's legs from his body, I think.
Which isn't out of the realm of possibility.
No, yeah, I'm sure Shane Long still wakes up at night shaking. But I would have this as a, you know, comfortable 2-0 win for Arsenal.
Hey, guys, I actually got to drop off real quick, but I'll throw my prediction in real quick before I run. I'm going to go with 2-0.